Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. We begin today's shiur in the middle of Daf Kuf Mem Ches. You will notice a Mishnah that represents the beginning of a new Perek, Perek Shoel, the 23rd Perek of Maseches Shabbos. Before we begin, let's glance at the sign under our topic heading that we call the Nosei, where we have written the following: Lahakpid, Levakesh Beloshon Hashileni Velo Halveni. In the event that a person needs to borrow something on Shabbos, he should use the expression Hashileni. In Hebrew, the terms Hashileni and Halveni both are associated with the idea of borrowing something. The word Hashileni, may I borrow. The word Halveni, may I take a loan. At times, these terms can be interchanged, or the public doesn't emphasize the any difference between the two terms, but there is a difference in each term and its connotation. For example, the word halveni, alone, has a long-term aspect to it, insofar as halacha says that stam halva shloshim yom, that a loan that's extended is extended with, unless otherwise qualified, it would be a loan for not less than 30 days. In other words, the one extending the loan, the lender, cannot press for collection before the passage of 30 days. So 30 days is a relatively long period of time insofar as our discussion. And therefore, on Shabbos, if a person says, if he would say Halveni, and he's not supposed to, but if he would say it, that might motivate the lender to write it down so as not to forget that he extended the loan. However, the word Hashileni, can I borrow such and such from you? Borrowing doesn't have that same long-term connotation. And therefore, if a person says Hashileni, so the one who is lending the item will not come to write it down because he anticipates getting it back fairly soon. So the Gemara, Shoel Odo Mechavero Kade Yain Vekade Shemen, person may borrow from his friend on Shabbos pitchers of wine and pitchers of oil. Ubovat Shelo Yomar Halveni. He should be careful, though, not to use the word Halveni. Rather, Shoel means like Hashileni. Can I borrow, as opposed to Halveni, loan to me? V'chein ho'isha mechaverta, kikros. And likewise, a woman can borrow from her friend loaves of bread. V'im eino mamino, if the lender doesn't trust the borrower, maniach taliso etzlo, v'osei mo cheshbon li'achar Shabbos. So the borrower will leave a garment, collateral, by the lender, and after Shabbos, they will calculate how much needs to be returned. V'chein Erev Pesach b'Yerushalayim shechalios b'Shabbos. Erev Pesach comes out on the 14th of Nisan, and in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, people would offer what's known as the Korban Pesach, and it would be eaten at the time that we call the Seder night, which is at the night after the 14th of Nisan, the ushering in of the 15th. So if the 14th of Nisan, which is the time for slaughtering a Korban Pesach, which is one of those sacrifices then that overrules Shabbos, insofar as that in general slaughtering is forbidden on Shabbos, but the Korban Pesach supersedes Shabbos, and it's processed on Shabbos. If a person didn't buy a Korban Pesach before the 14th, and here he is the 14th of Nisan, and it's Shabbos. So the same thing happens where the person who needs the goat or the lamb will go to someone who has such animals, and as the Mishnah says, Meniach Taliso Etzlo, the person who is trying to acquire the Korban Pesach, the lamb, will leave a garment by the provider of the animal, Venotel as Piso, and take an animal for Korban Pesach, Voisimo Cheshbon, the Achar Yom Tov. Lachar Yom Tov would mean 3 days later, meaning the 14th is Shabbos, so he's going to make the transaction on Shabbos, and the payback isn't going to take place till Monday, because that is till Sunday. Again, let's correct ourselves. It'll be Monday, because Shabbos is the 14th. Yom Tov is on Sunday, the 15th. And the 16th will be the first opportunity for actual payback to take place. So that's 3 days, if you count inclusively, 3 days later. Well, the cheshbon, the calculation and how much needs to be paid, will be then made. The Gemara. Omar le Rovo bar Rav Chonon le'abaye. Mai shno hashileni umai shno halveni. What is the difference between these two terms? After all, they both have a loan-borrowing connotation. Omar le hashileni lo osi lemichtav. If a person uses the term hashileni, so the lender won't come to write it down, because he's sure that he'll get it back soon. Halveni osi lemichtav. If the term halveni is used, loan to me, so the lender, hearing that, realizes he's not going to get back the item until quite a long time passes, as we said, a minimum of 30 days. So that will, he might forget himself and write the loan down, and it's on Shabbos, and it's forbidden to write on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, V'ha kevan de b'chol zimnin de boi lemeimar lehaveni, v'amar lehashileni. Is it not so that the b'chol means during weekdays, during a common business day, people at times need to use the term halveni, and they switch the word halveni and say instead hashileni, v'lo kopid iluya, and people aren't mindful of that, v'osi lemichtav, and he might come to write even though the word hashileni is used, because the return won't take place till a while later. Well, by using the term hashileni, since it might be interchanged for halveni, the same problem arises. Omar lei. So he answers, b'shabbos kevon de hashileni hu de shorulei rabbonan, halveni lo shorulei. Since there is a rule that the only term you're allowed to use on Shabbos is hashileni, and you're not allowed to use the term halveni, minkaro milsa, that creates recognition, v'lo osi lemichtav, and they will thereby not come to writing. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice some markings that need explanation. Diamonds begin to appear, and they continue. There's one over here, and another one appears 3 lines from the top of Amud Beis. On the side, under our Mivne heading, the diamond appears, and we have written, Shnei Pinios Shorovo Bar Rav Chonon El Abaye. We'll see Rovo Bar Rav Chonon addressing Abaye on two occasions. One here, and as we said, on Amud Beis, 3 lines from the top. The topic that we will deal with immediately, we've written under the No Say heading, Afapi Sheshinui Rotsui B'Shabbos, even though we have learned that doing things B'Shinui, differently on Shabbos than you would during the weekday, is something desirable, Be'inyan she'ivas mayim e efshar. When it comes to the act of drawing water, we will see in the Gemara that however you're used to doing it during the weekday, you will do the same on Shabbos, because any change will have an undesirable effect, as the Gemara will explain. You'll notice the use of a double underline, and that's under our Mivneh heading. These are a sidra, a series shel hatsa'ot, suggestions, eich laharos shinui b'shas shiva, v'kulam nidchu. The Gemara will attempt to show how we could possibly make a shinui, make a change while drawing water, but each suggestion will be rejected. So now let's turn to the Gemara. Omar le rova barav chonon labai michti. Let us look into this. Omru rabbonon komili di yom tov. When it comes to all matters of yom tov, kamo de'efshir l'shnei mishaninon. Wherever there's an opportunity to do it differently than you would during a weekday, we would change. Mishanin, we would strive for that change. Therefore, hani noshi de'malyon chatzvayu maya. Women that go to fill, malyon is to fill up chatzvayu, their pitchers, with maya, with water. My taimo lo mishanin. Why is it that on Yom Tov they fill their pitchers the same way that they do during the weekday? So Abaye answers, mishum dolo efshar, because it's simply not possible. The change will not be desirable. If here, as we said, the Gemara will suggest all kinds of changes, and we'll see how none of them are really desirable. By way of markings, are calling this section of Gemara a long answer. And this will take us down to the third line from the top of Omid Beis. And we're doing so because all of this is, in effect, Abaye's response to the question of why don't they change. And the answer is very terse, and that is mishum d'lo efshar. It's not possible. Now, the details are why. Hechi lavdi, so what would you suggest? What should they do? D'malyon b'chatzva rabbalim b'chatzva zuto. Let's say their weekday practice is to fill up b'chatzva pitchers rabba, large ones. And now you want to suggest limu b'chatzva zuto that they should fill up on Yom Tov using small pitchers. Ha ka mafshu behilucha. But it's going to have an undesirable side effect, in that by using small pitchers, so for the same quantity of water, they're going to increase, mafshu is increase, hilucha, they're walking. In other words, if during the weekdays they drew their desirable quantity of water in one large pitcher, they might need to draw that same quantity of water in three small pitchers, so they're going to go back and forth three times as opposed to once. And so that's not desirable, to increase this tircha just because it's Yom Tov. Now, demalion b'chatzva zuta limle b'chatzva rabba. Let's say during the weekdays they're used to filling up with small pitchers. Now on Yom Tov, you want to suggest they should use a large pitcher. Yeah, but ka mafshu b'masui. There's the undesirable effect here is that now they're going to be carrying something much weightier, and that's undesirable. If they're used to carrying lightweight pitchers, now by expecting them to fill up one large pitcher, it's a much heavier burden for them. So that would be an undesirable departure from the regular activity. And just because it's Yom Tov, that would be unfortunate. Continuing on the top of Omid Beis, Nifros Sudra. Let's suggest that they should spread over the top of their pitchers a cloth, demonstrating difference. The Gemara says that's not a good suggestion. Osi lidei schita. It could come to be squeezed out. In other words, while the cloth is on the top of the pitcher, it might fall in, and they'll come to wring it out, and that's forbidden on Yom Tov. Nichsei be natsamo. The suggestion here is attach to the pitcher a lid, and in attaching a lid, they would need to tie the lid onto the pitcher. So maybe that is the shinui, the change that would be desirable. Moshe says that's not a good idea either. Zimnin de mifsik v'osi lemikture. The fear is that the rope that's used to tie the top might snap, and it'll end up tying the broken or the torn rope on Yom Tov, and that's an Isur Malacha to Mikture is to tie something, to make a knot. Hilkach lo efshar. So you see from all of these attempted suggestions that the to make the change from what they regularly do is simply not possible. The Omale Rava Bar Rav Chonon Labai. Notice the Vav before the we Omale, the Omale. This is why we often mark names, because the Gemara is pointing out that, and he said this other thing. The Vav is the Vav HaChibor. It's attaching to what was previously said, in the sense that just before we had Rava Bar Rav Chonon turning to Abai, and again. So, V'yomale Rava Barav Chonon Labai, Tanan. We have a source. Actually, before we go any further in the Gemara, we ought to turn to the topic heading and structural note to appreciate what we're going to see. On the side, under the Nosei, we've written the following. And this is a well-known phrase. Mutav Shu Shogigin V'al Yu Mezidim. There are circumstances that it's better that people should violate things unwittingly than continue to violate knowingly. That's a situation that arises when people are so convinced that what they're doing is correct because of habit or tradition, though it's erroneous. They have a tradition that's false, that shouldn't have taken place, but they're so rooted in their practice that if you try to correct them, they simply won't listen to you. So in such a case, it's better for them to continue their violation, their transgression, in an unwitting fashion. One who violates Bishogig is considered a lesser offense than if you were to inform them, and they would continue the transgression. In that case, they would be doing so knowingly. That's called Mazid, and that's a more serious offense. So when you know that your exhortations, your admonishment will not be accepted, then better remain silent. There are many more details to this particular principle, but that's what the Gemara will be featuring in the next number of lines. So, that's the topic. Now, as far as markings, we're going to see a triangle used, and under the Mivneh heading, these are dugmos, these are examples of deroyim oivrei aveira. We will see examples or illustrations of transgressions, velo amrinon lehu velo midi, and we've used this double underline under the expression that will be appearing in a repeating fashion, as of course all our series markings attempt to show. So now and that of course means velo amrinon lehu velo midi means, and we don't say anything to them. Now the Gemara, Tanan, we have a Tanaic source says lo misapkin velo mitapchin velo meraktin biyomtov. One is not to engage in misapkin. This is misapkin is what we would call clapping. Rashi says kaf el kaf. There is a machlokis between Rashi and Tosas as to why one might be doing this. Rashi says this would be a demonstration of avelus. Tosfos says of a demonstration of mourning, but Tosfos disagrees and says not like that. It's rather clapping out of joy, simcha. Another thing that one is not to do on Yom Tov is metaprin. This is where one bangs on his chest. Instead of clapping, he does that action. And Rashi says, al halev. And velo meraktin is dancing. So none of these are to be done. And the Rashi points out, based on the Gemara in Maseches Beitza, that these are forbidden, because if you do this, you might come to play musical instruments, and if the instrument breaks, you might come to repair it. And that's Gzera Shema Yitaken Klei Shir, and in repairing, let's say, a guitar string that breaks, that snaps, that rips, and you repair that will be an Isur Del Raisa. So we ruled against doing these things, which are associated with music and keeping a beat, because of that gezerah that we just mentioned. So the Mishnah says not to clap or dance on Yom Tov. V'kochazinon da'avdinon da'avdinon. We see people do that. V'lo amrinon v'luhu v'lo midi. And we don't say anything. We keep quiet. So, and this was bothering Rava bar Rav Hanan. Why is it that we keep quiet? So Rabbaye says back, uletamech ha di'omar Rava. Or there's another gersa, Rabba. Would be more likely that it's Rabba, because Abaye is quoting, he would be quoting his Rebbe, that's Rabba. That which Rabba says, lo leisiv inish apuma de lechaya. One should not sit at the entrance of an alleyway that has a lechaya, is a lechi, it's the upright pole that signifies the a boundary between the a public thoroughfare, a Rishus Rabbim, and a Movui. A Movui is a three-sided, it's like we call a dead-end street, possibly. It's three sides of houses and courtyards, and one, the open side, opens to the public thoroughfare. As such, it is a Rishus HaYochid from a Torah perspective, to signify the point of transition from the public thoroughfare and the private area of the Mavui, a lechi, an upright pole, is placed. Now, it's very important that one is aware that from Rishus Rabbim, going from Rishus Rabbim into a Mavui, it's a change of domain, because so as not to come to carry something from a Rishus Rabbim into a Mavui, or vice versa. That would be an Iser Hoitzor, Hachnosa. So a lechi is placed there. We are told in this particular Maimra of Rabbah, don't sit at the entrance. Dilma Megander Leichefetz. If, let's say you're sitting in the Movui, and it's likely that you're holding items, you're seating, maybe playing a game or reading a book. Something that you're holding might roll out of your hands. Megander is to roll out. That's an item might roll out. The Osi, and you'll come to bring it back. It'll roll out of your hands into the Rishus Rabbim, and you'll end up bringing it back into the Movui. So that's what Rabba says. Don't sit at the entrance to a Movui on Shabbos. The ha kochazinon noshi de moisvi chatzvayo the yasfon apuma de mavua. But we see ladies that place chatzvayo barrels, and they sit there at the entrance of a Mavui, v'lo amrinon luhu v'lo midi. And once again, and no one says anything. So, you know, if you're asking me about the dancing phenomenon and the public silence, what about the sitting by the Mavui entrance phenomenon and the silence? Elo hanoch l'Yisrael, mutov shu shogigin v'alyu mezidin. Rather, we say, leave them be. Hanoch is to leave them be. Don't speak up, because they're not going to listen to you anyway. And therefore, it's better if they continue their problematic activity in a shogeg fashion, unknowing, because at this point, they think they're okay. They think they're doing something all right. And don't inform them and make them into knowing violators. Savor minah. So upon hearing this, Rabbo bar Rav Hanan figured Hani Mili b'Drabbanan, that this concept of keep quiet and don't, better for them to be shogig and not maze, it applies to matters that are of a rabbinic nature. Avol b'Doraisa lo, when it comes to matters that are of a Torah nature, a Torah level violation, that this principle would not apply. The lohi, and that's not true. Lo shno b'drabbonim, lo shmo b'doraisa. No difference between rabbinic and Torah level violations. Daha, and we're now going to show you another case, which is in fact a doraisa level issue, and we remain silent. Toisefes diyom akipurim doraisa hi. The idea, or the concept, the practice of adding to Yom Kippur. In other words, if we know that as at the point of, let's say, the appearance of three stars, that represents the onset of the new day. In this case, you're entering Yom Kippur. And that is when Yom Kippur officially begins. However, there is a need to start the Yom Kippur practices before, before sundown. Sundown being associated with as soon as the sun sets. So then there's a period known as Bein Hashmoshes, which is an unclear period of time insofar as right at Bein Hashmoshes you might have the three stars appearing. So there's we call it a security time zone that the Torah expects us to add, which we call Tosefes Yom HaKippurim. In other words, it's prior to sundown. It might be a very short amount of time, but a minute or two before sundown, one is already expected to observe the Yom Kippur laws. And that is a Torah expectation. And we see people eating and drinking until actual darkness. In other words, people don't practice this Tosefes Yom HaKippurim, v'lo amrinon lehu v'lo midi, and we remain silent. Once again, it's because people won't listen to you anyway, assuming that, and therefore better they should be shogeg and not be mazed. V'chein isho mechaverto kikros. Our Mishnah described women borrowing loaves of bread, and of course, if you borrow something, there's going to be payback. So after Shabbos, the lender will receive in return a loaf of bread from the borrower. So the Gemara introduces a new topic, and on the side under our No Say heading, we've written the following: Halvoas kikor v'ribis, the issue of borrowing loaves and the concept of interest. Interest in a financial sense. The Torah prohibits Jews from extending loans with interest. And rather, what you loaned is what you will get back and nothing more. What happens, or how does the halacha look at situations where you, let's say, loaned an item, and at the time that you extended the item to the borrower, it had a certain value, but at the time it would be returned, the value, the market value of that item increased. So even though the person is getting back the same physical item size-wise, nevertheless he's getting something of greater value. This presents a problem of interest. So now the Gemara points out, infers from our mission of B'Shabbos Hudasir, Avol B'chol Shapir Domi, on Shabbos. So we say there are restrictions to say loan to me because of the problem of coming to rights. Rather, we say Hashileni, may I borrow a loaf. So that's as far as Shabbos is concerned. Avol B'chol Shapir Domi, but during a weekday, we can infer that you can say to a woman, one can say to a friend, loan to me a loaf of bread. And the expectation is that in the course of time, the loaf will be paid back, will be returned. Now, it might there not be an increase in value of the returned loaf? And yet the inference from the Mishnah doesn't seem to indicate there's any problem. So this presents to us a question, and we're noting this. You can see with the marking as a long question. Lemo masnisin de lo kilo. Let us suggest that our Mishnah does not conform to Hillel. Disnan, the Tanaic source, has the following: V'chein hoya Hillel Omer lo, and thusly Hillel said, lo silve isha kikor lechaverta. A woman should not loan a loaf to her friend, ad shetasena domim, until she says, listen, I'm giving you this loaf of bread, and it's worth $1. So the borrowing woman, she realizes she's getting something that has a value of $1. Why does Hillel say this? Shemo yukru chitin, because in the course of time the value of wheat might increase. V'nimsu bolus lidei ribis, and the women here will come to eventually a ribis violation. Ribis is the interest. Our Mishnah doesn't indicate any concern over this matter. All that we're saying is on Shabbos, be careful of how you make the loan, but on a weekday, just loan the bread and get back a loaf of bread. So the Gemara says, Afilu Teimo Hillel. You can say that our Mishnah conforms to Hillel. But the Mishnah didn't indicate any need for establishing a pre-establishing of value. The Gemara says, Ha ba'asra dekits dome, ha ba'asra delo kits dome. Kits means established, dome, a fixed value. Rashi says, ba'asra dekits dome, in a place that there are fixed loav dekikros, loaves have known values, lo asili de ribis, shimyo kiru, if prices go up, yitain de mehen. Then a loaf won't be returned, but rather the value of the original loaf will be returned. So that if you're in an area where loaves have fixed values, so then then that's the case that we infer that b'chol it would be mutter. That if it's a weekday, then it's mutter to loan a loaf. And being that the value is well known, so if there's any change in value, the borrower will simply give back the cash value of the original loaf. However, if it's a place that the value is not fixed, so then there could be a problem. So in such a case, it would be important for the people involved to establish a value at the time of the loan. V'im eino ma'amino. The Gemara, before we go on in the Gemara text, let's take a look at the side under our No Say heading. Havas Yom Tov, a loan extended on Yom Tov, I nitan ligvois bebezdin. Can you collect, can you press charges or collect it through a court? In other words, we are saying that you should not, you shouldn't extend a loan on Yom Tov, or let's say a loan was extended on Yom Tov. Can you get the court involved to help you collect it? Let's say in the event that the borrower doesn't want to pay you back, can a court be activated to enable you to make the collection? We will see in the Gemara there's a Machlokas Rabba and Rav Yosef regarding this. So the Gemara, Itmar, Halvoas Yom Tov. Rav Yosef Omar, Lo Nitno Litova. You cannot activate based in Litova means to collect. Collect through the courts. Varab Omar Nitno Litova. That it is a type of loan that you can seek the court's assistance to collect. And the Gemara now elaborates, takes each one of the Shizas. We underline the names Rav Yosef and Rabba, and now we're going to dash underline their names so as to signify the point of the Gemara where they offer explanations. Rav Yosef Omar Lo Nitno Litova. Rav Yosef is convinced that you cannot activate a court. De'i Amris Nitno Litova. If you would say that you can activate the court to enable you to collect the loan extended on Yom Tov, then Osi Lemichtav. You will come to write it down. In other words, because you know you will have a means of collecting it, then you'll come to write it down. Therefore, since we know that people are allowed to loan things on Yom Tov, it must be that he won't come to write it down. Now, why will a person not come to write it down? Because he knows he's not going to be able to collect it by any legal means. If the fellow is nice enough to return it on his own, so be it. Rabba Omar Nitno Litova. Rabba says that you can activate the court. The Amris Lo Nitno. If you're going to say that you can't activate the court, then people aren't going to want to extend loans on Yom Tov. Lo Yohiv lay up. Then the lender isn't going to give anything. We all see Limnuye Misimchas Yom Tov. The borrower is thereby going to be deprived or withheld from enjoying Yom Tov. If he needs the loaves or he needs the meat, then he's not going to be able to borrow it. And why would he not be able to borrow? Because the lender is going to be afraid to lend it. Why will he be afraid to lend it? Because he doesn't have any court recourse. Therefore, there's a net loss to the population in their not being able to enjoy Yom Tov. So therefore, it must be, says Rabbah, that the lender has the option of activating the court. As we go on, we notice new markings, triangles, and as we continue in the Gemara, we're going to notice these triangles appear in different directions. You also notice that the tips are colored in so as to make these triangles distinct from the triangles that appeared earlier on the Omid. So, on the side, under our Mivneh heading, we've featured triangles in two different directions. These are Hochochos, the Shnei Hatzdodim, proofs to the two sides, namely Rav and Rav Yosef. With the point facing upwards, we've indicated Lo Nitan Litvoa, the proof of the Gemara. There will be an attempt to prove you cannot activate the court. And with it flipped over, that will be an attempt on the part of the Gemara to show Nitan Litvoa, that you are able to collect. Namely, through the court. The Gemara, Tanan, Im Eino Mamino, Maniach Taliso Etzel. We saw in our Mishnah that if the lender doesn't trust the borrower, so the borrower will leave an article of clothing by the lender, type of collateral. E Amris Bishlamo. Now, marking wise, we use the squiggle underline to enable you to focus on the different sides of the argument. So here we're going to say Iyamris Bishmo, and the next line says Elo Iyamris. But if you say the other side of the argument, that's what we try to do with our markings. Let's see. Iyamris Bishlamo Lo Nitna Litova. If you say, it'll be good if you say that it's a kind of loan, a Yom Tov loan is something you cannot activate the court to help you collect. That's the very reason why the lender will expect the borrower to leave some collateral, and then they'll make whatever calculations and financial considerations after Shabbos. Once again, if you say that the court is not an option, that's the very reason why the lender will want to seize upon a form of collateral, because that will be his only insurance. But if you say that the lender has the court option of collecting, what interest would it be for the lender to seize a talis from the borrower? Let the litenlei means let the lender give the loan and collect it through the courts. In other words, he has the court insurance, or the court avenue of collection. Why does he need the collateral type insurance? Omar, the response to this, in other words, I could tell you that it really is nitno litova, and if you're going to ask why the collateral, I'll tell you. Omar lo bo'ino de lekum bedino vedaino. The malve, the one who is loaning, the lender, will say, I don't want the whole headache of going to court and choosing a judge and all the hassle that's involved in a court procedure. So that at this point in the Gemara, just note the structure. This section opened up with the triangle pointing up. We thought we were going to show that it's lo nitna litova. At this point in the Gemara, we have rejected that as a proof and saying it might very well be that it is nitna litova. And as far as the question concerning the collateral, so we explain that's to enable the lender to have an easier means of collection than going through the court hassle. Mosiv Rav Idi Bar Oven. Now here, you'll notice the triangle is inverted, so that the thrust of this section is to show that, as we indicated on the side, that it's basically Nitan Litova. Mosiv Rav Idi Bar Oven. Hashochet Es HaPora V'chilka Barosh Hashanah. This source is not very lengthy, but there's a great deal of background that one needs to know before learning this. First of all, in one word, it's called Shemitah, the issue of the seventh year, the sabbatical year, which is a time at which loans that have been taken, if they haven't been paid till now, they are canceled. And on the side of the Gemara, we should note that we have a subtopic featuring this section, and we call Hachzoras Chov, the return of a loan or a debt, Shizman Pirono Higia Besof Shvius, a loan that became due at the end of the Shemitah year. Now, according to the Torah, it is the end of the sabbatical year that causes loans to be released, if you will. That means that according to Torah law, a person who owed money, owed a debt as a result of a loan, if he hasn't paid up till this point, he doesn't have to pay up any more. What we're saying is strict, Torah level law. We're not getting involved at this in our discussion with all kinds of details of different types of debts, and we're not going to mention the issue of prosbul either. So in our source, it was an issue of meat, and a debt incurred because someone needed meat. And when did he take them? When did he need the meat? He needed it for Rosh Hashanah. Now, we're familiar with Rosh Hashanah as being a two-day holiday. We have to leave our minds open for the time being and realize that there is a possibility of Rosh Hashanah being a one-day holiday, and that one day being the beginning of the new year. When we talk about the new year, we're going to refer to it as the year after the sabbatical year. Sometimes we call this the eighth year, or alternatively, it's the first year of the new sabbatical cycle. So I think we've presented enough background material. Now let's see the source. Hashochet esapara v'chilka b'rosh Hashanah. Person slaughtered a cow, and he has meat to... it says chilkum literally means to distribute, but it's really distribute with the anticipation of people paying for it. So he slaughtered it at the end of a Shemitah year. It's the end of a year. It means we're at the time that we celebrate Rosh Hashanah. The chilka b'Rosh Hashanah, and he divided the meat, he gave it out to the customers on Rosh Hashanah. Im hoya chodesh me'ubar mishamet. Chodesh Mubar means that the month of Elul, instead of being a 29-day month, it's a 30-day month. In that event, you will have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. The 30th day, which is the last day of the sabbatical year, and the second day would be the first day of Tishrei, the new year, the eighth year. The meat was given out on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. That's in this case in Hoya Chodesh Mubar. They made 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Mishame means that the loan is going to be canceled. The loan, what do we mean by the loan? It means the debt that was incurred by receiving the meat. People that got the meat owed money for the meat, didn't they? Will they have to pay it back? No. And why not? Because the debt was created there at the last day of the sabbatical year, but it's that day, in fact, that loans that have been incurred up till that point are, at the end of that day, are thereby canceled. So they receive the meat, and thereby creating a debt on that last day of the sabbatical year. Well, they don't have to pay for the meat. The imlav, if it's not a chodesh mu'ubar, but rather, Elul was 29 days, and the next day was declared the first day of Tishrei, and that's the time they got their meat. So when were they getting their meat? On the first of Tishrei. That's the first day of the eighth year. So Eino Mishamet, the people that received the meat in that case will have to pay for it. That because it's essentially a debt that's created on the first of the new year, of the eighth year, or year one of the new cycle. So that is that's a tenet source with facts presented. How does this tie into our discussion? The e lo nitno litova, if it were so that holiday loans are something that cannot be collected, in other words, that you cannot activate a Beis Din, my mishame, what is meant in this source by the Shemitah year canceling it? Even without the Shemitah year canceling the debt is canceled because the lender won't be, the lender in this case the meat distributor, won't be able to get it back anyway because of lo nitno litova. But the source says mishame. It means that indicates to us that only because it's the end of a Shemitah year, that's the reason the individual won't be able to collect his Yom Tov created debt. If not for the Shemitah factor, he would be able to collect. That's why in our markings we have this inverted triangle, which shows that this is an attempt to prove nitan litvoa. The Gemara rejects this and says shiny hosam. The case that we just read with Rosh Hashanah and the Me'ubar year, the Me'ubar month, shiny hosam, de igloi milsa de choyul hu. The Igloi Milsa means retroactively, by the fact that they made it into a two-day Rosh Hashanah, retroactively, that means the first day of Rosh Hashanah really was not Rosh Hashanah, it was really considered a weekday. Because Rosh Hashanah, from the Torah perspective, comes out on the first of Tishrei. Therefore, it's not a holiday loan. It's Chol, it's a weekday loan. So, as a weekday loan, it certainly would have been able to be collected in the court. And only because it's the end of the Shemitah year is it canceled. So that you can't use this as a proof regarding laws of holiday loans. Because, as Gemara just said, this is in effect an example of a weekday loan. So it's not relevant to our discussion. Ta Shema. Once again, we have an inverted triangle. Let's see. Ta Shema Miseifa. Let's try to bring proof to our discussion from the continuation of the source. And it's the end of the source we just read. Im Lav Eino Mishame. That means if it's a one-day Rosh Hashanah, that means it was not a Chodesh Me'ubar, then Eino Mishamet, which indicates the meat distributor will be able to collect the debt. E Amris Bishlamo Nitna Litova, if you say well that you are able to collect through the courts, Hainu Dikotoni Eino Mishamet, that's what the source reflects when it says it's not, the loan isn't canceled, meaning the lender, or in this case the meat distributor, will be able to collect through the courts. Elo e amris lo nitno litova, but if you're going to say the other way, that holiday loans cannot be collected through the courts, my eino mishamet. What do you mean by eino mishamet? Eino mishamet connotes you'll be able to collect. But if you're going to say lo nitno litova, you won't be able to collect. You're not going to be able to activate the courts to get your collection. The Gemara says, in fact, here once again the Gemara is rejecting this attempt. We will tell you that in fact eino nitan litova. So what does it mean, eino mishame? The e yohivle shokil, if out of the goodness of his heart the person who received the meat wants to pay you for it, then you are allowed to accept it. Eino mishame means you can accept it. Well, if that's how you're going to learn this Tanaic source, so you got to be balanced. So now take this approach and go back to the beginning of the source. Michlal deresha, are you going to tell me then that in the Reisha case, where it turns out that the meat was given to you on the at the end of a Shemitah year, if the guy who received the meat wants to pay for it, you're not going to be allowed to take payment. You're saying at the end of the source, the Eino Mishame means you're allowed to take payment. So then when the source says Mishame, that would indicate you're not allowed to take payment. Well, why not? The Gemara answers, and the Gemara maintains this approach. Reisha, in the Reisha case where it turned out to be a weekday, namely end of Shemitah, when we said it was a Chodesh Mu'ubar, so the meat provider, Tzorich Lemeimalei, he has to say to the receiver, to the one who had incurred the debt, Meshameit Ani, that when the customer comes to pay, the provider has to utter, I am going to desist from accepting the payment. So that in the ratio, the term that was used, Meshameit, means that he has to say Meshameit Ani. Once again, what took place there? The meat was received was a 2-day Rosh Hashanah situation where the first day was actually the last day of a Shemitah year. And as a result, the loan on a Torah level is canceled, and therefore when someone wants to pay back such a loan the next day at the beginning of the 8th year, the lender, or in this case the meat provider, has to say, Meshameitani, I am resisting, you don't have to pay me back. Seifah, in the Seifah case where there was only one day of Rosh Hashanah, meaning it was the first day of Tishrei, which is the beginning of an 8th year, of a new year, of a new cycle, The meat provider, the salesman, the seller doesn't have to say, I am resisting collection, because he's fully entitled to collect. Kidisnan, this is taught in the following Tanait source. Here, be careful, don't translate this literally. What it means here, one who was receiving a loan that became due on the Shemitah year, at the end of the Shemitah year, and he's coming to pay it back afterwards, at the beginning of the 8th year. Yoimar lo, the lender is required to say, Meshameit Ani, I forgive the loan. The im omar lo afapikain, if the lova, the borrower, says, I want you to take the money anyway, even though Shemitah canceled it, Yekabel Mimenu, the lender is entitled to receive the money, receive the payment, Mishum Shinemar Vizet Dvar Hashmita. That is a pasuk, and in the word Dvar you see the word Dibur, meaning that the lender is expected to Dibur, to say Meshameit Ani, that I forgive, or I resist repayment. Rav Avya Shokil Mashkona. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Shokil Mashkona Bishas Halvo Mehalvoas Yom Tov. Rav Avya's practice was to receive, to accept, or to take, he would take a collateral for a Yom Tov loan. In other words, he wanted to ensure repayment, so he would take collateral. Rabo Barula Marim Arume. Rashi Marim Arume. Marim has to do with a trick. And what did he do? In other words, if he had, let's say, loaned something out on Yom Tov, so La'achar Yom Tov Lokeach Mimenu Shum Chefetz Uma'akvo. He would take an item from the borrower, and my assumption is that he wouldn't steal from him something. He would ask, "Can you give me some item?" And the owner, who happened to owe Rabba money because he owed him because of the Yom Tov loan, so Rabba would ask him for some item, and then he would simply Rabbah would keep it, would not give it back. I'm assuming, of course, we're talking about people that weren't interested in paying for what they received on Yom Tov. There's a Tosfos on the middle of the Tosfos column, Rabo Mar Nitno Litova, and Tosfos rules Halacha Kerabo Vegabi Rav Yosef. So, according to Tosfos, in these cases of Yom Tov loans, you would be able to activate the courts to collect that which you loaned out on Yom Tov. The Gemara continues, V'chein Erev Pesach. On the side of the Gemara, under our topic heading, the Nosei, we read as follows. Dino Shel Rav Yochanan. We're going to learn Rav Yochanan's law. Korbonos Shekraven B'yontov. Holiday sacrifices. Mutar Lahakdishon B'yontov. It's mutar to sanctify them on Yom Tov. In order to appreciate this, there is a Mishnah that says, Eluhein Mishum Shvus. There's a Mishnah that Rashi quotes that there are things that are forbidden on a rabbinic level, and amongst those are Ein Magdishin. You don't sanctify things, so that in the course of the Beis Hamikdash era, people had interest in bringing sacrifices, all kinds of different sacrifices. Voluntary sacrifices that were brought from time to time, a person is not allowed to dedicate, to makdish, to sanctify an animal as a sacrifice on Shabbos or Yom Tov. However, and that's what our focus is going to be, as we indicated in our introduction, that those kind of sacrifices that are offered on Yom Tov, if you can actually slaughter them and burn them on Yom Tov, so you can see that they are docha, they supersede the laws of Yom Tov. Therefore, a Yom Tov oriented sacrifice can also be dedicated, can be sanctified on Yom Tov. So that the rule that we alluded to, that there's a rabbinic restriction in dedicating things and sanctifying things, that applies to those kind of korbanos that you're not allowed to bring on Yom Tov. Of course, what's included in that one has to learn other gemaras to see the details. So now our gemara. The Chein Erev Pesach, we're dealing here with the Korban Pesach, and the Korban Pesach is one of those sacrifices that, if the 14th of Nisan, which is the time that the Korban Pesach is brought, comes out on a Shabbos, the Korban Pesach supersedes Shabbos. So, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Makdish Adam Pischo B'Shabbos V'Chagigoso B'Yom Tov. A person can sanctify a goat or a sheep as a Korban Pesach on Shabbos, even though, as we just said, sanctification of animals as sacrifices is a rabbinic prohibition. Nevertheless, when it comes to a Korban Pesach, one is allowed to dedicate it on Shabbos, and the Chagiga is a Yom Tov based sacrifice, so that if a person is going to bring his Korban Chagiga, and he didn't sanctify it from before Yom Tov, he can sanctify an animal as a Korban Chagiga on Yom Tov day. Neimo Misayale. We have a new marking, so let's take a look at our Mivneh. The bow tie shape is featured on the side. Makoros Shemisayim Rabbi Yochanan. These represent sources. We're going to introduce sources that would seem to support Rabbi Yochanan. So can we say that the following supports Rabbi Yochanan? And what do we cite? None other than our Mishnah. V'chein Erev Pesach B'Yushalayim. That's the 14th of Nisan, which is the date for bringing a Korban Pesach, and you're in Yerushalayim, Shechalios B'Shabbos, and it coincides with Shabbos. Benich Talisa Etzlo, we saw this in our Mishnah, that the animal provider will take from the customer a garment, V'Notelis Pischo, and the customer will take the animal as a Korban Pesach, V'Oiseh, and whatever money is owed, so the cheshbon, the calculation, will be made after Yom Tov.
What do we see from this? We see someone acquiring an animal for his Korban Pesach. So, obviously, he's going to be makdish, he's going to be dedicating it, sanctifying it on Shabbos. This is what Rabbi Yochanan said. The Gemara rejects this. It says, Hocha b'mayaskinon, the source we just read is not talking about a person buying or acquiring his Korban Pesach, but rather, b'memane achirim imo al pischo de me'ikora mikdash v'koi. The case here was a person who had a Korban Pesach, a Korban Pesach that had already been dedicated. That's what we emphasize with the dot underlined, the Me'ikora. It was dedicated, it was sanctified before Shabbos. So what's taking place? Who is the customer over here? So there is an expectation from the Torah that a person eats his Korban Pesach with a group of people. The group of people are people that are appointed. They might buy a section, buy into a Korban Pesach, buy a portion. So you have here an owner of a pre-sanctified Korban Pesach that is memana, that's appointing others to join with him on the Korban Pesach, and that new partner, if you will, he will pay for his portion after Yom Tov, and that's what's described in the source. But as far as an indication that sanctification takes place on Shabbos, that you do not see over here. But rather, this will be a little repetitive. This was a case where someone had a pre-sanctified Korban Pesach and was having others join with him as partners in the Korban Pesach. The Gemara asks, "V'ho anan t'nan ein nimnin alha behemo b'tchila b'yom tov?" But is there not a law that people do not join at the outset on Yom Tov, or in this case on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, "Shaini hocha." This case is different. Kevin the Rogil Etzlo, since the person in question, in the we'll call the Botai source, is someone that every year joins with this owner, Kemandi Imni Bei Meikora Domni. It's as if, because of the anticipation, it's as if he was appointed from the outset, meaning even before Shabbos. The Gemara asks, Vaha Toni Rebbe Oshaya, do we not have Rebbe Oshaya's source? A person goes to a shepherd that he is a regular customer by. Well, here it's very clear that he goes to the shepherd, and we're talking about our case of the 14th, and it's Shabbos. And he receives from the shepherd a sheep or a goat. And umakdisha, we dashed underline, this is the main point. And he is dedicating it, and he fulfills his mitzvah with that. And here, so you see, like Rabbi Yochanan said, and that's why we have a bow tie, it's another source supporting Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara says, no support, rejection. Hosom nami, the case involving the fellow going to the shepherd came under Rogil Etzlo, since the customer is a regular by him, Agdushi Makdish Le Meikora. It was in effect sanctified. The shepherd sanctified it from before Shabbos because he knows that this customer is going to come to him on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, Vaha Makdish Kotani? But the term Makdish indicates that right now, the sanctification is taking place. The Gemara says, not so. Hekdish ilui midrabbonan. The original, authentic sanctification took place Erev Shabbos, by the Roe, by the shepherd himself. What's alluded to about a sanctification on Shabbos is a rabbinic expectation that the owner, the new owner, the one who is going to actually use the animal as his sacrifice, he should also make a dedication. But it's a rabbinic stringency. Therefore, it doesn't bear out Rabbi Yochanan's teaching, who spoke about an original sanctification taking place on Shabbos. That we don't see here. The Gemara asks, "Umi Yomer Rabbi Yochanan Hachi?" Would Rabbi Yochanan have said what we supposed he said to begin with, namely that you can makdish Korban Pesach on Shabbos? But we know Rabbi Yochanan to have ruled like a Stam Mishnah. Stam Mishnah is a Mishnah that has no name, no Tana's name in it, and is therefore viewed as authoritative. And Rabbi Yochanan rules like the Stam Mishnah. Utna, the Stam Mishnah says, Lo imakdishin, v'lo marichin, v'lo machrimin, v'lo magbin shumusu maestris. There are all kinds of restrictions, and we, for our purposes, just focus on that which we've marked. That one is not to sanctify Kol Eilu B'Yom Tov Amru Kal V'Chomer B'Shabbos. All of these restrictions of not sanctifying sacrifices and not making other kinds of dedications that are like Erechin and Charamim, and the prohibition of separating tithes, Trumas and Maestris tithes, these restrictions are in effect regarding Yom Tov, and all the more so regarding Shabbos. So what do we see? That one is not to be makdish, and that's Rabbi Yochanan's ruling. So how can Rabbi Yochanan rule above that makdishin, that you can be makdish? With, of course, the markings, it's so easy to see the question. Originally, we underlined Rabbi Yochanan's name at the beginning of this section and dashed underline makdish, and here we dashed underline Rabbi Yochanan's name to draw your attention, and here we've emphasized lo makdishin. Well, it says lo kashya, there is no contradiction. Kan b'chovos shekavua lohen zman, kan b'chovos she'ein kavua lohen zman. Chovos are obligations, sacrificial obligations. Shekavua lohen zman means they have a fixed time. The fact they have a fixed time means if their time comes on Yom Tov or on Shabbos, that's the time you have to offer them. Such sacrifices, one can make the initial sanctification as well on Shabbos or Yom Tov. However, chovos shein kavua lohen zman, those are sacrifices. They may be obligatory, but they don't have a fixed time. The person is obligated to bring it. If a person, let us say, dedicates a sacrifice, thereby incurring upon himself a debt, a sacrificial debt. So, it might be a chov, it might be something that he's obligated to bring, but it doesn't have a fixed time. Likewise with sin offerings, it's a chov, but it doesn't have a fixed time. So those kind of sacrifices, one is not, and that was the Stam Mishnah we alluded to, one is not makdish them on Shabbos nor Yom Tov. The Mishnah. Mone odom es orchov ves parparoisov mipiv avolo min haksav. If a person has guests that he has invited and parparos of different types of delicacies and dainties that he is going to serve them, so if he needs to count the guests and the portions, he is to do so orally and not from a document, not from something that's written. Rashi says, Avolo min haksav, in kosav merev Shabbos kach v'kach orchim, Ploni, ploni, zimanti. If a person had written a list, Erev Shabbos, indicating so-and-so I invited to the meal, Kedei shelo yishkichem, so as to not forget who he invited, lo yikubay siksab b'Shabbos. He shouldn't read from that list on Shabbos. As to why not, that the Gemara will deal with. Mephis odom im bonov v'im b'nei beso al hashulchan. Mephis has to do with drawing lots. The lots would indicate who gets what portion. So, person amongst his family, his children that are sitting around the table, each one would draw a lot, and the lot would indicate which portion they would get. Ubilvad shelo yiskavin lasos mona gedola keneged mona ktana. The Rashi here says, Ubilvad shelo yiskavin lasos shiu hamona shavos. The portion should be of equal size.
Yitlana.
this too will be explained by the Gemara. Umatilin chaloshin al hakotshim biyontov avoloi al hamonois. Chaloshin also is associated with lots, so that Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash can draw lots for the distribution of different sacrifices on Yom Tov, meaning sacrifices that were brought on Yom Tov, but not al hamonos. And this expression, so Rashi points out, this too will be explained, dealt with by the Gemara. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.